Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is the City of Pierre Appellant versus Wade and Lisa Hubbard Appellees. For the appellant, we have Mr. Robert Ryder and Ms. Lindsay Ryder Rapp. And I understand that Ms. Ryder Rapp, you'll be speaking for 15 minutes, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then 5 minutes has been given to the amicus, was represented by Mr. Larry Nelson from Kent, is that correct?
Yes,
all right. And then Mr. Robert Ryder, you'll be giving the 10-minute rebuttal.
Correct.
All right. And then the appellees are represented by Mr. Charles Schroyer, an attorney also from Pierre. The court should note that Justice Zinner has disqualified himself from this matter. And the court has appointed the Honorable David Gienap, who is the presiding judge of the Third Judicial Circuit from Brookings, to sit in Justice Zinner's place. Ms. Ryder Rapp, you may proceed and you have 15 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice Gilbertson, other members of the court, Mr. Schroyer. My name is Lindsay Ryder, and I'm an attorney here in Pierre, and I am the city attorney for Pierre. And I'm here today in that capacity. This case addresses the process that the City of Pierre employed when it assessed adjoining property owners for the reconstruction of the curb and gutter as part of an overall street improvement project. Pursuant to a resolution of necessity, the City of Pierre declared it necessary to reconstruct the curb and gutter, including the driveway approaches in the affected areas, and to levy special assessments against the plaintiffs and other landowners for the cost of these improvements. The project included not only reconstruction of the curb and gutter, but also reconstruction of the street, as well as replacement of the sewer and water mains. The three areas of town that were principally involved in the project were North Grand Avenue, North Tyler Avenue, and East Dakota Avenue, all in Pierre. The reconstruction on Grand Street was driven in part by replacement of the water mains. However, it was also due in part to the age of the curb and gutter in that area of town, which was constructed in the 1930s and had reached the end of its useful life.
How many of these, the people that challenged it come from, I mean, is there a way you broke it down? Who's in, how many of them are from which street?
You know, I don't know if there's necessarily a rhyme or reason as far as how many. I think that the interested individuals step forward and there's kind of a
so they're actually from all three projects and from all three streets.
Correct.
And what, about a third of them? Of the people that were assessed and affected by this project, excuse me, appealed it?
That's probably a pretty good assessment. I haven't actually calculated what it was, but there are a few plaintiffs from each area of town that were indeed plaintiffs. However, on North Tyler and on East Dakota Street, it was not a total reconstruction like it was on Grand Street. On that portion of the project, not all of the curb and gutter was replaced, just portions of it. And the reason being, that in those areas of town, the city determined that the curb and gutter had not reached the end of its useful life in those areas, therefore it was not all replaced.
Is the city control when curb and gutter is replaced, or can a private property owner say, I don't like the way mine looks, I'm going to put new in?
Usually what happens is the City of Pierre, you know, and I can't tell you exactly when they determine that they're going to, I guess, go through town and kind of make an assessment of the different areas that they think needs replacement. They put that on their, I guess, list of to-do things for that year, and then they go out to each property and start marking the areas of town that they're going to do. Now, if a person says, hey, I want my curb and gutter replaced, I think if they're willing to pay for it, the City of Pierre would probably agree to something like that.
So on those, on the streets where they didn't replace it in total, the other streets rather than Grand. Then they, did they adjust assess those property owners who received a new curb and gutter?
Yes. Yep, they didn't assess any of the other property owners.
So they made the determination on each one of those that the curb and gutter was of such disrepair that it did need to be replaced.
Right. And as far as the project in total, the curb and gutter was the only portion of the project that was assessed against the adjoining landowners. The cost for replacement of the sewer and water mains, as well as the reconstruction of the street, that was paid for by all the taxpayers in the city, not just by the...
And that amount, then, the curb and gutter was in that one line item that was, what, about $48,000?
That sounds about right.
Is that right?
That sounds about right. Prior to the reconstruction, what the city of Pier did is it went out to each individual property and looked at the condition of the curb and gutter and actually took pictures of each property. And then, of course, after the fact, they also took pictures after the reconstruction had been completed. But I think the pictures really speak for themselves as far as what the city of Pier observed. There were a lot of technical terms that were used at trial, but what they saw was tree lifts, spalling, and the gutter pan where the, I guess, the aggregate was exposed. You know, portions of the curb in some areas were actually missing. And they saw those adverse conditions in all areas of town.
So each property that where the curb and gutter was replaced, was the... Was it all in the same condition, or were there some properties that had a better curb and gutter, but the city decided to replace it anyway?
I would say that in some areas, the curb and gutter maybe was not as visibly deteriorated as the other. But if we look at Grand Street in particular, we know that much of that curb and gutter was constructed in the late 30s to early 40s. And we had the chief engineer testify at trial, and he said that the useful life of concrete is 50 years. So we knew that a lot of that concrete had reached the end of its useful life.
Did all of the plaintiffs then testify about the whether there was a special benefit to them, or was it only some of the plaintiffs?
Two plaintiffs testified at trial, and both plaintiffs live on North Grand Avenue. There were not any plaintiffs that testified that lived on North Tyler or East Dakota.
Why not? Why weren't they also required to come in and rebut the city's presumption?
And that's part of our argument, Chief Justice Koningkamp, is that essentially the
trial... He's the chief, but
I'm sorry.
He's got a promotion.
Justice Koningkamp, I apologize to Chief Justice Gilbertson. But that's part of our argument, Justice Koningkamp, is that the trial court essentially painted a rather broad brush when she determined that the plaintiffs in all of the protected or all of the areas had been or had not received any benefit by virtue of the improvement.
Actually, she did not find they didn't receive any benefit. Her findings say that they did receive a benefit, but that the city's benefit, it didn't outweigh the city's benefit. That the city's benefit was the same as the property owners, therefore the city should pay for the whole thing and the assessments weren't special benefits.
Right, and I would agree with that, and I think that...
And also there's testimony that even from the people that testified, that certain property owners, along with Justice Koningkamp's question, that certain property owners actually did receive a benefit because of the condition of the curb and that it did need to be replaced. But is there any reason that you can provide that why the court didn't address individual property owners then?
And I think that's part of, too, what the Municipal League raised in their brief, is that that would have been the more proper procedure to look at it more on an individual type basis instead of saying that everybody didn't receive a benefit, commensurate with what they received. So I guess really the remaining facts are relatively undisputed. What I think the main issue is the procedure that the city of Pier employed in its attempt to comply with the statutory framework that does indeed authorize the levying of a special assessments for these kinds of improvements. The plaintiffs, actually, in their complaint, they claim that the methodology that the city of Pierre used is constitutionally infirm. They also say in their brief that the better procedure should have been that we should have went in, the city of Pierre should have went in and done before and after appraisals of each property to determine the amount of benefit, essentially, to the property owners. So we would urge the court that this interpretation of statutes and application of statutes to the facts entitles to the court to a de novo review.
Now you mentioned statutes. There's two separate statutes. Did the city of Pierre identify from the get-go which of those two statutes it was proceeding under?
Chief Justice Gilbertson, if you examine, I think, the resolution of necessity, I think it becomes apparent that the city of Pierre essentially assessed each property owner strictly on a front foot basis. In Whitaker versus City of Deadwood, the court upheld the constitutionality of the front foot rule. And I believe under 945.30 that no showing of special benefits is actually required.
But wouldn't it be for constitutional purposes you'd have to show special benefits, even if the statute doesn't have that particular wording?
You know, and if you look at, I guess, the case law kind of generally speaking, when it comes to assessments, they do talk about special benefits.
So it's a threshold question before you get to the statutes, the procedural statutes, of whether or not there's a special benefit for constitutional purposes of takings analysis.
I don't. I mean, 945.30 seems to suggest that the municipality can go out there and assess the property owner strictly on a front foot basis.
But wouldn't that, and I agree with that, but wouldn't that presuppose that the decision or that the facts would support that the property owner is receiving a special benefit in order to meet the constitutional requirement? And I, it's a constitutional issue here. That's why we're here,
sure.
Correct? We're not interpreting these statutes. We're interpreting whether or not they are, whether it's been constitutionally applied in this case or whether it's a taking because the assessments outweigh the benefits.
And I would agree. I mean, we're not, and I don't think that the statute itself is not at issue. It is the application or how we apply the statute, and I would agree with that.
Is the city taking a position on the method of appraisal? Is market value, difference in market value, the only method of determining benefit, or are you taking a position that that's not the only method of determining benefit?
Well, I think in the court's decision in Holly versus City of Hot Springs, Chief Justice Woolman in that particular case rejected the market value approach. Now, they recognize that there are more than one approach to valuation. And there was testimony regarding that. However, they ultimately did reject the market value approach and said that it was too rigid and inflexible of a standard to use and that the better approach would be the cost approach that, which takes into consideration the cost of the improvement. So I think ultimately in that case, this court, I guess, adhered to the or rejected the market value approach and adhered to the cost approach. And I think that's part of what our argument is that the trial court, it seemed, you know, on the one hand, agreed that the market value approach was not the proper approach to take. However, if you look at it, I can't remember her exact words, but she seemed to require specific qualification from the city. And if you look at Holly, in Holly it says, you know, that these kinds of benefits don't always translate into hard dollar terms, and that there sometimes are more intangible type benefits to the property owner. And so you can't always put a dollar figure on these kinds of benefits. And also, if you look,
so in Holly, I just re-looked at that this morning. It says on this record, it cannot be said that the assessments established by the city did not bear a reasonable relationship to the benefits bestowed upon the respondent's property. Do you remember, did she make any determination on whether there was a reasonable relationship to the benefits?
I can't remember if exactly in her opinion she used those words, but what I would say is that I know that that specific question was asked of the plaintiff's expert witness, Terry Leibel, and he indicated that he was not able to say that. Part of what the problem is he says, you know, basically what he said was there's no direct information out there in the market on the value of added benefit of a properly functioning curb and gutter. I can't say that there isn't any value. The market just doesn't reflect that kind of stuff. So the plaintiff's argument really doesn't make sense, because if we were to be required to do before and after appraisals, if the appraiser can't even state with specificity what that increase in market value is, how would we ever be able to show that under their theory? And kind of going to your question earlier about ultimately the court saying that the benefit was to everybody and not to just the individual property owners, I think that the testimony of the chief engineer really was the key testimony with respect to that issue, because he did testify to the benefits that were received by the property owners. He talked about really each property and what the adverse conditions were that were depicted in these pictures, and how these adverse conditions can affect the landowner, and how...
Now, the one thing about those pictures,
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but...
No, go ahead.
Finished. But are those pictures of the same people that are in this lawsuit? That's what I couldn't tell.
Right, they are.
They are, okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will now yield my last 5 minutes to Mr. Hood, who has filed an amicus brief on behalf of the Municipal League.
You have 5 minutes.
Chief Justice, members of the court, Mr. Schroer, my name is Larry Nelson. I'm a lawyer from Canton, South Dakota, and I'm appearing here on behalf of the South Dakota Municipal League. Our cities in South Dakota historically are at a place where much of what was installed to make everything work is getting old and is going to need to be replaced. And we have concern about the ramifications of this case, as it's going to affect our ability to replace that infrastructure as it ages and as it wears out. We've always understood the law to say that we have the ability to assess property owners for things or improvements that benefit their property.
Now, there's no question that you can assess to install initial curb and gutter, so the only dispute is replacement of existing, correct?
Well, that seems to be the issue raised by the plaintiffs in this particular case. I cannot find, Justice, anywhere in the statutes that it says that there's a distinction between initial construction and replacement. In fact, there's a statute that says when we do repave, replace, or redo a street, the city has the ability to pay for part of that, and implied within that statute, I think, is the realization that we, meaning the cities, have the ability to do that. There's also a statute that says that when we do assessments, that the benefit is what the costs of that are. And that means what it costs to construct it, the engineering, the legal, the financial costs, etc. But we, again, are here seeking some clarification, hoping to encourage the court to continue to apply the Hawley case. And the Hawley case to us said that we're not really looking at a financial issue, we're looking at a special benefit issue. And we think the court erred when it said there was no benefit. I learned this morning that in Pier, that if your soil gets wet, the shales out here expands and contracts, what happens is sometimes your basements will collapse, or it was described to me as it would explode. In my neck of the woods, people have groundwater problems, and the name of the game is to get the water off of your property and get it out into what I call the ditch or the curb and gutter. And I think the big benefit that we didn't talk about here is the ability of the property owner to get rid of his unwanted water. And when it rains heavy, you want to get rid of the water, and the method to get rid of that water is the curb and gutter system, which the court properly noted was of benefit to both the city and to the property owner as well. We also believe that the pictures speak a thousand words. If you look at what property was actually benefited, and I note that Mr. Orbson, the plaintiff in his testimony, seems to indicate that other property owners were benefited, but just not him. And I think he's perhaps the poster child in this case, because the record appears to indicate that his curb and gutter had been recently replaced, and he says, well, this wasn't fair to me. And within the assessment process, there's a process where you go in front of the city council, and you can ask them to true up, and you can ask them to fix inequities, and we never got to that point. And I think the process needed to work through. We got simply to a constitutional argument where there was no benefit at all. And
so just to follow up on that, then that is what would happen here if we reversed?
Well,
each individual property owner, just like a tax assessment of any other kind, can come before the city and object to it? Or how would it work?
My understanding is you could go in and then have a hearing, and you'd appear at the hearing and say, I've seen my assessment notice. I disagree in this particular. I don't think I was benefited to this degree. And then you can republish those and true up. It's kind of the due process thing that you go through, Justice. The other thing that we wanted to point out to the court is that there was an opportunity for the circuit court to either say, okay, I'm going to decide how everybody was benefited, or I'm going to send it back to the city council and let them make that decision. In the I think it was the Whitaker case versus the city of Deadwood, that case ended up being where the assessment wasn't any good because they hadn't followed some procedure. And then in 1913, following session, and I've got to correct myself, it wasn't Whitaker, I think it was Ashton, there was a law passed that, which is now that 94374, the true-up provision I just talked about, and that was in response to correct that problem, so everybody paid their fair share.
Let me ask you a question before.
Yes.
I know your time is up. But,
you
raised this statute, and you said the circuit court had the option of either deciding itself whether each benefit or sending it back for that determination. And that's 94374. And that statute wasn't raised by either side. You and your client raised that. Do you think that that's, and here the circuit court just entered a permanent injunction, which I see is not allowed under that section 74. Is that statute jurisdictional? In other words, did the circuit court have the jurisdiction to grant a relief that 74 doesn't grant?
I'm going to tell you, I don't know the answer to that, to be frank with you. If that helps me win the case, I agree with you. Thank you.
I don't think anybody's going to ask you any more questions.
Mr. Schreier, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, Mr. Ryder, Ms. Rapp, and Mr. Nelson, my name is Chuck Schreier. I'm an attorney and peer, and I'm here on behalf of the approximately 70-some individual property owners who control approximately 30 parcels out of the approximately 160 parcels that were affected by the action of the city to replace curb and gutter in the city of Pier. I would like to initially point out that the action that was taken by the city in this case is somewhat unique to this area of the state. From our recollection or our understanding, Pier and Fort Pier are two of the communities that use this approach. Other communities have used the approach of a general assessment when it comes to replacement curb and gutter or replacement street improvements. I think the key points to keep in
mind. How do we know that? I guess that isn't in it isn't. It
is.
There was some testimony or some question, but I couldn't tell.
There was just some general testimony in the court. I believe Mr. Orsbaum, in his capacity, had done a rather unscientific polling of the communities in in the area, and had determined that, you know, it was very, very few cities that used this. This started in, we think, about 1986 in Pierre.
So, are you representing, or do you believe that the evidence supports it? Because, you know, we're all going to, I mean, that is a question that's kind of a question here.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately,
is this decision going to affect every city, or is this a unique situation, or is this how they all do it? And we don't know that.
Well, I believe that it's only being done in about three places in the state of South Dakota. Now, it may be contemplated by other cities, and I suspect that, depending on the decision of this court, it may become more universal.
And we're talking about just the replacement, not
that's
the
correct.
Initial.
And I think it's very important that we keep in mind throughout the entire process of reviewing and deciding this case, and it's in your hands, obviously, to do that, that number one, these are for replacement improvements. This is not for initial construction. But even if it was for initial construction, you still have a constitutional issue, we believe, that it has to show a special benefit. It's much easier to prove that with initial construction because it adds value to the property. If you've got a bare piece of land, suddenly the city puts in a new street, and in most cases the developer ends up putting those improvements in at their cost, but if the city were to put in a new street to provide access or a new sewer line to drain the sewage or new storm sewers to take care of the water runoff, that obviously adds value to the property, immense value. But when you come back in later and replace those improvements, very difficult, in our opinion, to show that there's any special benefit.
Except even your witnesses indicated that some of the curbs and gutters that were replaced did need to be replaced.
They did.
So how do we deal with, you know, she broad-brushed the whole thing. And if there is some special benefit to some of the property owners and not to others, how should the courts be dealing with that then?
Do well, Justice Mayer,
use the one statute that then goes in property by property?
Mm-hmm. Well, Justice Mayer Henry, I believe in response to that question, I would have to say that the real issue here is what is the purpose of curb and gutter and the purpose of a surface on a street? And we all know that when roads are built, and this is just common knowledge, they're crowned off. In the rural areas, they're crowned off. There's usually ditches that are lower than the road. And the purpose of that, or curb and gutter, no matter how the street is constructed, is really to get the water off the highway. Because we know that once water sits on a spot, it makes it soft underneath. It adds to the deterioration of the road. We would contend, and I believe the circuit court found, essentially, that the purpose of curb and gutter is to benefit the city and the people who drive on that road. It protects the integrity of the road itself. It has very limited value, if any, to the homeowner that happens to be adjacent to it.
Although she did find that the homeowners also received a benefit.
They can benefit, and I think under the...
was her finding as well, and then she balanced it.
Correct. And in the final analysis, I think, and I really appreciate the work that the circuit court put into the memorandum decision here, because I think it obviously there's a many contrasting statutes. This whole chapter cries out for some legislative updating, because I don't think any of it really has been changed since back in the 40s.
You can't do that.
No, obviously you can't. But I mean, it is difficult to understand and appreciate what one is trying to accomplish by looking through those provisions when they're all over the board. There's pieces that have come in here and there. There's been rewrites. Obviously, some of these have been rewritten at times in the past, probably in response to, perhaps, some of the early cases with reference to the constitutionality. And on that point, I want to make it clear, too, that we're not in any way challenging the state law here, the constitutionality of any of the statutes that we're visiting here today. We're talking about the underlying theory that was expressed by the U.S. Supreme Court and has been absorbed by the South Dakota Supreme Court in our state, referencing the need for special benefits. You have to show that. It can't be just the general benefit that applies to everyone in the community, everyone that drives a vehicle.
All right, Mr. Schreier, that's part of the question. How is that special benefit to be measured in two aspects? First, the measure of it, if it's just market value or some other method of valuation, and second, what level of benefit? Is there a cutoff of level? Is there a percentage that it has to be 50% or 75%, or how is that determined?
Well, it's unclear, obviously, from the statutes. They don't address that
point. It's a little unclear from the decision that was appealed up here also. What's your position on that?
Or the decisions of the past.
We have to decide that. So
I think it's much simpler to decide this kind of an issue from our perspective when you have a large project that don't involve very small parcels. I mean, obviously, it becomes very difficult to show special benefit to just one little lot in a large street improvement compared to in the Hawley case where you had a new sewer line that went into an area that had never been served by a sewer line before. Obviously, that just automatically added value to the property. There were special benefits accrued by the fact that sewer was put in and added value to the adjacent area. And here, though, we're talking about, again, replacement. There wasn't really any benefit to the homeowner, and I think the court concluded that the homeowner themselves did not benefit anything by way of special benefit just because their curb was reconstructed. I mean, we have people whose curb had been reconstructed just a year before this process started. In 2006, they replaced it.
What would be the problem of having then the individual property owners just challenge it one by one under that proceedings that Mr. Nelson talked about? What's the problem with addressing it that way?
Well, there's probably not a problem with addressing it that way. I just think, practically speaking, the reason we're here today is because this was such a massive reconstruction. We're talking about a huge project by peer standards compared to what had been done in the past.
But if we affirm this, what we're really saying is that you can assess the initial curb and gutter under that statute, but no repair.
Well, I think even the initial curb and gutter would have to be done on a special benefits basis.
That's not an issue.
No, that's not an issue.
Under the facts of this case, everybody agreed that the initial one was, so we just have to take it that way. But isn't that what we would be saying? Is that for repairing, there really isn't enough special benefit to the property owner, almost as a matter of law, to assess it constitutionally.
I believe that's correct, Justice Mayor Henry. And in the final analysis, the circuit court, I think, reached that conclusion, but said, under that Hawley provision, there's still a presumption in favor of the city here. We're going to let the city have the presumption of a special benefit. They're going to have to show that they've got that right, and the landowners came in and conclusively proved to the circuit court's satisfaction that there was no special benefit.
Then a question: are you saying that, given these unique circumstances your clients have and the facts they brought to the court, that a special benefit was not established in this case only, or are you saying per se there is legally basically impossible to prove a special benefit for a replacement process?
I wouldn't go that far, Chief Justice Gilbertson. I think that there would be potentially cases out there. I think you have to look at each one of these projects through a different perspective because they're all different. They're all
unique. So this is a factual call, not a legal call.
I believe it is in some respects. Yes.
Under your theory, can you think of a factual scenario where there would be a special benefit?
Well, I can see if, for instance, if water was impounded on a person's street or their lot, they're on their yard, it was reaching up on their house because it wasn't draining properly. I mean, you could perhaps argue that there's a special benefit in that case. In this situation, there were none of those cases like that. There wasn't anybody that was suggesting that any landowner's property was in jeopardy here. This was basically done because an aging water line had to be replaced here and there in the city. And the city properly, and we believe appropriate fashion, decided that it would be appropriate to do that in a manner of reconstruction. It didn't make a lot of sense, particularly on the Grand Avenue project, to go in there and rebuild the street, take it all the way down, put in new water lines, new sewer lines, new subway, new surface on the street.
And Mr. Schreier, there was testimony that there was a 60-year life expectancy or useful life of the concrete, and much of Grand Avenue had reached that 60 years, wasn't there, from the city engineer?
There was testimony to that effect. I dare to say that the Romans wouldn't agree with that. The people who live in Italy have buildings and aqueducts that are thousands of years old that are still there made out of concrete. That was a conclusion that was reached by one of the city engineers. The people that live on Grand Avenue would argue that the value of their curb in the old style, which is where this is a historic area of pier, in the old heavy high style, really was more aesthetically pleasing to them than the new curb. It maybe detracted from the value there.
Wasn't there considerable spalling on some of the concrete and some of the, you're saying that was not a detriment?
Well, it was a detriment to the city in terms of the integrity of the underlying street. We're not saying it did anything for the homeowner to have a spalled curb and gutter. The city assessor, the county assessor, the state, the realtor that testified, and the appraiser, certified appraiser that testified in this matter, said it doesn't make any difference in the value. You're not going to find any difference because you've got a brand new curb and gutter as opposed to one that's 6 years old or 20 years old or 50 years old. It's very similar to what you would see if you couldn't see it and it was a water line. The water line in front of your street, if it's 100 years old, are you going to know that? Is it going to make any difference in the value of your home? People don't look at that. It doesn't have any material effect on the value. If it did, then we're going to have assessors going out and trying to add something else into the mix here in terms of the street value. What if the city decides they're going to do it with pavement? What if they're going to do it with other improvements? I mean, the same thing accrues here, and I think we have to show that in order to meet the constitutional test, that there was a special benefit. And then that has to be quantified. And it can't just be quantified by saying, well, this is how much it's going to cost to replace all of this. We'll divide it up equally on a running foot basis. That's certainly unfair to the person that just replaced theirs a year ago or five times in the last 20 years because the city kept coming out saying, well, you got a problem here and we're going to replace this and you're going to pay the bill. But that's only happened since 1986.
Do you know if South Dakota has any, is this a unique thing with the curb and gutter? Because when you look at the cases, there really aren't a lot of cases that talk about curb and gutter as opposed to streets.
I'd say it's very unique. I think going back to the comments earlier, I believe the city of Pier and Fort Pier are probably the only two places that do it this way.
The rest of them just charge everybody in town?
Right. They just do a general assessment, and they repair all of the street costs at the cost of the general population.
Is that in the record?
I don't believe it is. That's what we were visiting about earlier, Justice Searson, but that's my understanding, at least. But with that, I would certainly engage any other questions. If you have any, I've got some time left here, but it's essentially our position, and we feel very strongly that if the court considers the fact that we're talking about replacement curb and gutter, that the purpose of the curb and gutter is really to benefit the city, not the homeowner, and that we recognize the distinction between special benefits and general benefits.
I have a question. One of the terminology in some of the in our decisions goes from the special assessment has to be different from, as opposed to the special assessment has to be more than what the city has. And it seems like in this case, the circuit court looked at the benefits and said that the property owner has to, or the city has to show that the property owner's benefit is more than the city's. Which is the proper test here, or do you advocate one or the other?
I think they're not necessarily opposing tests. I think they would both have to be considered. I believe in the end, the burden is on the property owner to show that they're not receiving a special benefit, and I think we proved that to the satisfaction of the circuit court.
Do you think it is more of a balancing and that it's more than the city's benefiting? That that's what has to be?
Well, in this case, we would argue that there's very, as far as balance goes, it's very skewed on the side of the city because the purpose of the curb and gutter as the street surface and the underlayment of the street is really for the benefit of the traveling public and for the city in general to preserve the street, not to preserve the homeowner's land that happens to be adjacent to it.
So I guess the next question then on that is that you've advocated very strongly in your briefs that this is a question of fact that we review by a clearly erroneous standard.
Correct.
If that's the case, what does that mean then? That every time then that there's assessment on any kind of street improvement or whatever, that it's got to go property by property, or how, what kind of impact does that have on the law and the direction we're giving to property owners and cities?
If the city believes that there is a benefit to the property owner, I think they need to document that. And they need to be prepared to show that to that property owner. Now, I think, again, getting back to what was said earlier, the reason we're here is because this was a massive project. You had a number of people involved, a couple of lawyers involved that understood the law and were willing to go and do the research and bring this matter to the attention of the circuit court. People in the situation of just having a small piece of curb replaced, it's going to cost them $300 or $500 or $1,000, just aren't going to undertake the effort to do what we've done here. And I commend the plaintiffs in this case for their willingness to put principle ahead of their values or of the cost involved here and to proceed with the matter. And we brought this to the attention of the court, and we believe the circuit court found properly so that we were correct in our analysis of this. You know, Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Orsbon and others, many of the people involved in this case and others that aren't involved as plaintiffs, what, they were down at the city commission from the day this first was announced in 2007. And they appeared several times and brought this to their attention. And I don't think anybody had really ever looked at it from that perspective before. And I think that's why we're here. So I think we would all benefit from, you know, an analysis by this court and some direction in terms of how this is to be done. And I think if it's going to be a major change in the law, I think it needs to be broadly applied to other improvements as well, because people are going to be coming up here with every other kind of improvement that you're talking about too. If they decide to apply this to street pavement, or they decide to apply it to sewer lines, or whatever it may be, it's very hard to show that a replacement curb and gutter, in our opinion, has any special benefit to the homeowner, and I think that's what we proved. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schroyer. Right, Mr. Ryder, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Good morning. Please, the court, Bob Ryder, Assistant City Attorney. First, members of the court, I would like to make sure the record is accurate. There were efforts made by Mr. Schroyer and his clients to present what other cities do by way of an informal assessment that Mr. Orsbon made of those other cities. The trial court judge said, no, that's not admissible. Pages 135 and 136 of the transcript. There is no evidence in this record regarding what other cities do. Mr. Schroyer might make the statement before the court, but it's not in the record. So I would urge you, even though it's mentioned in the brief and also today at argument, there is not testimony in that regard. If there had been testimony, we would have offered testimony, certainly reflective of it. The trial court judge properly decided that the decision she needed to make was not based upon hearsay of what somebody collected from other cities, but rather upon the law as it was based in this particular case. And as Justice Kohnkamp suggested in his earlier questioning, the presumption is that the city is correct in its determination that there is a benefit. Now, what the law has said is that it's a legislative act of the city. When the city passes this resolution, it's a legislative act. It's not unlike a legislature passing a statute. And there is a presumption of the validity of this. And the only way the plaintiff can prevail, or plaintiffs, is if they overcome that presumption, if they are able to show that the decision of the city was arbitrary, was an abuse of the city's power, and was otherwise this legislative decision stands.
But we would also have to show there's no special benefit, right? Wouldn't, I mean, at some point we have to decide whether there was a special benefit in order to be in keeping with the Constitution.
Yes, Justice, I agree.
Okay.
The when we go forward, you've got two people that testified, two landowners testified, Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Orsbach. The rest of that, if the question was, what do you do about the case if you send it back and reverse it, the other parties have not sustained their proof. The benefit, it came through the testimony of John Childs. The benefit is shown by the DVD that's part of the that's an exhibit. I think it's Exhibit D. We had, or we didn't have, the city did, had John Childs go out, and he and another technician for the city took photographs of every single property that was going to be affected. And why did they take the photographs initially so that if Bob Ryder, landowner, comes to the city and says, I don't know why you're doing this on my property, my neighbor isn't having it done on his property because on North Tyler and on Dakota Avenue, that's how it was, we could show them the photographs and say, Mr. Ryder or Mr. Jones, here's what your property looks like. And then we can show afterwards exactly what the change was and the improvement, and more particularly, the benefit. Because if curb and gutter has no benefit, as the appellees might suggest them, golly, that seems kind of like a useless act to have curb and gutter to take the water away from the lots and or maybe take it away from a Walmart parking lot, and so we move it away and move it down into the drain system. But clearly there is a benefit, and we suggest that there's also a benefit to a landowner that the water doesn't percolate into the cut that is made from the street into their land or into their home where you take utilities in, and that one of the North Grand photographs that's attached to our brief shows a situation in North Grand where there was no concrete, where the landowner had put in a 2x4 to hold his or her dirt on the lot so it wouldn't slide out into the street and completely disrupt the property.
Do we then, under your argument, do we have to say, if we rule for the city, that the trial court's findings were clearly erroneous?
No. I believe that this is a de novo review.
You're arguing facts.
Well, if I might, just briefly, the complaint of the plaintiff said that the defendant city's methodology is unconstitutionally flawed. And if we look at that winner, the case that we cited in our brief, where we talked about the methodology of assessment of the real property involving Jim Carlin's real property down north of Winter, the court said when you look at whether or not the methodology is flawed or within the statute, that is either a question of law or a mixed question of law and fact. I argue, and we believe, that this involves it just like that, where they claim the methodology is wrong. It involves a mixed question of law and fact that this court can determine de novo.
Well, normally we don't get into the findings of fact, and basically the trial court determined that there was a benefit, but it wasn't a special benefit because it didn't outweigh the city's benefit, that really the benefit here mainly was to the city. Isn't that what she found?
Your Honor, the trial court found that we had not, I believe the trial court found that we had not shown the benefit with the necessary particularity, the benefit to the landowner. And so I think that's what she hung the decision upon, that we didn't have an appraiser go with us at every location in the city that we were going to make this modification or suggested that it ought to be made, and have the appraiser do an appraisal at that moment and then do an appraisal after the concrete was repaired on the curb and gutter and on the driveway on lots of these too, and say there was an increased value. I believe that's the foundation for her decision, and as Lindsay Ryder Rapp indicated, that's impossible to accomplish because their own witness, theirs being the appellee's own witness, testified that there is not information that is accumulated by appraisers that reflects directly what the value of that is and what the benefit of it is of having a properly functioning curb and gutter. There just isn't information. So we couldn't prove it. We can't prove it.
Are you basically saying that there's always a special benefit when there's replacement of curb and gutter?
Not necessarily. For instance, in the case where my curb and gutter is fine, it hasn't reached the end of its useful life, but there's benefit to having a functioning curb and gutter, but if mine's functioning and it's not in a state of disrepair, then perhaps their argument is better that there is not a benefit. But if I can carry on that issue or that thought, on North Grand, they said, well, this might be 60 years old, but it was still working. Well, how is that unlike shingles on somebody's house? In my mind, it's the same. I might have 60-year-old shingles on my house. Right now, they're still holding the water out of my house, but they're just on the verge of letting water in and causing problems for me because they're failing. And that's how this concrete is. The undisputed testimony is it has a useful life. All of us have useful lives, just like the concrete. And there comes a time where that needs to be, in our opinion, that the city can rightfully say, by putting new concrete in there, you have received a benefit. I asked Mr. Osborne this question. I said, isn't it true that if my concrete is 2 years old and yours is 60 years old, that you're getting a greater benefit when the concrete's being replaced because yours is at the end of its useful life? And after some initial responses, he agreed. It goes without saying, I suggest, that there are these benefits. So the circumstance that one member of the court also asked is, we've got two plaintiffs that the trial court judge made her decision revolve around. And back to our argument before, I believe, and we would argue, that the special benefit that was received by those others, which is presumed to be received, has to be overcome by them. The plaintiff has to overcome it. That's what the United States Supreme Court in the Village of Norwood said, that the burden is on them. The burden is on them to show that there's a substantial disproportionality between that. We ask between the benefit and the cost. And we ask their expert numerous questions. Ultimately, he looked at the photographs, the same photographs that are attached to your brief. He admitted, yeah, I suppose you could say there was a benefit. We asked him the question, are you suggesting that there is not, that there is some substantial disproportionality between the benefit and the cost? He says, I can't say that. As far as I'm concerned, I would suggest that the city prevailed at that moment when the plaintiff's own expert can't withstand or can't support their case with the argument and with his testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.